Yeah, for folks who weren't here yesterday, we did some individual or partner reflection time and then went out and found pieces of creation and brought back to this beautiful altar and shared sort of why are we engaging in this work, or why are we engaging in climate justice and environmental justice, not only as humans, but as people of faith. Yeah, any other reflections from yesterday?
Or questions?
Yeah.
And welcome. You don't have, would you like to come forward? We have so much space. No pressure.
A little bit.
Okay.
I don't know how long you can stay.
Okay,
that's okay. We understand.
But I will.
The other thing we'll point out from yesterday is that we were able to keep our whiteboard with our values written up on it. So as we created our altar, these are some of the words that emerged to embody our sharing and to guide us as core values for this work that we will return to again and again and inform the actions that we'll take, which is where we start to shift with our time together today talking about congregational action. So we've got some really great values here, ranging from rebirth, interconnectedness, stewardship, justice, perseverance, thinking about future generations and our relationships, and more. Okay. Jess, I'm wondering, since we're a small group, if we want to do intros, brief intros with everyone.
Yeah, we can do that again.
Yeah, I'm Maddie. Like I said, my pronouns are they, them, or she, her. And I come to this work from my own tradition of Unitarian Universalism, which I'm happy to talk to anyone about if you're like, what's that? That's a long phrase. and I live on Duwamish land, where Earth Ministries office is also located, but we work statewide. Jess.
And I am Jessica. My pronouns are she, her. I'm the program and outreach director at Earth Ministry, and I am a born and bred ELCA Lutheran on the path to ordination as a deaconess, which I'm happy to talk more about at another time. And I bring my call to justice to this work as a central value in seeing how climate change, environmental pollution, impacts those on the margins, and a core part of my faith is to speak up when we witness that and to try to create a more just society. So I invite you all to popcorn as you'd like to share, and maybe share what brings you to this work, kind of building on what we, those of us who were together yesterday, talked about.
Well, I'm Barbara. I'm from West Seattle, which is Duwamish land. I've been interested in the justice aspect of recycling and becoming more aware of how people have been using the earth. I'm an outdoor person and always have been. I've enjoyed camping and backpacking, although I don't do those things anymore because of my age. So I'm looking forward to expanding my understanding of where do I go next in terms of doing something. My congregation is, they said, on our gold star list with Earth Ministry. We're a greening congregation, and my pastor is very, very interested in this, and our worship services, which are only on Zoom at the moment, always begin with his saying that we live on the land of the Duwamish and other Indian tribes in the Seattle area. So he's always reminding us of the past that nobody ever really thought about before. That is, we white people have never really thought about before. So what else were we supposed to? Oh, I'm a she, her. What else were
that's
we?
That's great. Yeah, I think that's good.
I'm Vicki, and I'm from Ballard, Seattle. Mm. And I'm here because I just wanted to learn more about what Earth Ministry is and what a greening congregation is. And I'm not active in a church right now. I grew up Lutheran, I was confirmed. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, I'm kind of looking for a spiritual home, I think. Mm. And so I'm just exploring and seeing what's available.
Oh, yeah, we should connect because I'm a longtime Ballard resident.
We both used to live in Ballard.
Oh. Technically a member of Ballard First Lutheran as well.
So. Oh my. Okay. Is yeah. that a part of Seattle?
Yes, Ballard is a neighborhood within Seattle. So Seattle is very much a neighborhood city.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget to clarify. Would you like to share next?
Sure. My name's Catherine Schifferdecker, and I am from Missouri originally, but have lived in Minnesota in the Twin Cities area for 15 years now, and which is Lakota land. I teach at Luther Seminary. I teach Old Testament in St. Paul, Minnesota, and have been long committed to and fascinated by how what we can learn from the Christian tradition about care for the earth. So that's why I'm teaching a class in the mornings on Sabbath and sustainability. But I'm also the one of the leaders of the green team at the seminary, at Luther Seminary.
Cool.
So we've done a lot, gotten small grants for getting recycling containers, and we're have done a number of rain gardens to deal with water issues and other, you know, projects like that. But there's just, we have changed all the lighting, right, to be LED. And so we've done things like that, but I'm just always curious to hear more about, more steps we can take. And of course, we were completely online this year because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So the physical campus has been pretty empty, frankly, for the last year. But I'm interested in, as we come back from COVID, you know, where the green team should be looking, you know, next to be more.
My congregation has built two rain gardens,
uh-huh.
and we also have solar collectors on the roof.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Awesome.
I'm Wade Schwartz from Spokane, part of the Friends Meeting Quakers since the late 80s. I grew up in a non-religious family, actually, and always have had these kind of mystical experiences connecting me with nature. So very early on, I started collecting rocks, minerals, fossils, just about anything, settling on butterflies. Which I still have my collection on the wall after from about 1965 or 6.
Wow.
And I'm part of the Washington Butterfly Association. And we do some of these things too, like preservation of lands for species and things like that, as well as do counts so we can determine what's becoming extinct and what's moving into the area, because as climate changes, there's migration of species.
Yeah.
And things like that. I've just been interested more because we were involved with Faith Action Network,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I started getting Earth Ministry newsletters and stuff too. So I've been following you guys for 3 or 4 years, and glad to learn more about it. Other than that, I'm also a guitar player.
Awesome.
Just came back from jamming.
Nice.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you. And again, with acronyms and colloquial language, FAN of Faith Action Network is a partner organization of Earth Ministries that works across the spectrum of social justice concerns, one of which is environment. So we partner with FAN quite often. So it's great that you connected through that partner. So our time together today is focused in on our greening congregation's work. So it's fun to hear where everyone is coming from in network. We've got a couple green team members and folks in, you know, searching for communities, might want to be looking for greening congregations. This is something you could bring to your friends meeting, perhaps. So this is Earth Ministries' flagship program from when we got our start about 30 years ago. It was the first in its nation to offer a structure for houses of worship to consider stewardship and sustainability. Now there are many different options that exist across the country, but Earth Ministries Greening Congregations program is still one of those that we have a strong network of across the Northwest, but also there's some in, there's one in Arizona and in California and in Oregon. So it's not a Washington specific program. I'm not going to go a ton into who Earth Ministry is because we did a lot of that yesterday. I know Vicki, you expressed some curiosity there, so we can chat later if you'd like. But the real basic is that we are based in Washington State. We're connected to a national network through the Interfaith Power and Light Network. So there are other states that have a similar organization. And a lot of our work is, like we said at the beginning, really rooted in our values, but then taken out into action. And yesterday we talked about a three-legged stool as a metaphor for our work. So the first leg of the stool is faith formation, and that's that work of saying, why is it that I care as a person of faith? Where does that come from in my sacred texts, in the teachings of my tradition, in how I really embody my faith? Then we naturally start to say, well, what does that mean? How do I take action? So the second leg of the stool is our life together in community, and that's what we'll focus today. And then just for tomorrow and Friday, we'll be focused more on faithful advocacy. So that's how we raise up our voice in the public sphere to advocate for systemic change. So with our greening congregations work, I think the beauty of it really is in its flexibility. It is not a particularly rigid process because we really want to go where the passions of each community are. And so it looks really unique and diverse across the different participating congregations. So for example, we're going to be walking through five different areas of greening congregational life. And some houses of worship like to touch a little bit on each of those areas. Some really dive into one or two. So there's the path to engagement. We really want to be one that energizes your community rather than like adding extra work or burden. And that we've seen kind of leads to more sustainable long-term greening. Also, the program offers kind of a public commitment out to the broader community. So greening congregations, you know, some are like, oh, we're already doing this work. Like, why become a greening congregation? There's a level of, accountability. That's the word. To making this public commitment. We give folks a banner that says they're a greening congregation for their community to display, and you know, a mission statement that is often public as well that the green teams will develop. So really in making this commitment public to show that it's something that the community as a whole values. So we could get into the process if you're really curious about that. We have a very detailed document called our Greening Congregations Toolkit. And I'm very sorry to say that I forgot the one printed copy we have at home. It is a PDF, so we are able to email it out. So if you're interested in it, please just sign up on one of the clipboards here, and we are going to be sending out a follow-up via email that will have a lot of goodies, and it will include the Green Congregation Toolkit there. But that walks through the process in more detail. We have a handout that Maddie is going to pass around that summarizes the program and the different steps towards completing it. So we'll just use this kind of as our guide for today. Can I grab one from you too?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. So I want to actually start on the back side, kind of with the steps, because this is where we can organically begin. And first of all, kind of start by finding like-minded, like-spirited folks within your community. A dream team will often kind of pop up organically in a way. Sometimes it comes from us visiting and the people who stick around after a workshop are like, oh, let's do more. And that can spark a dream team. And then there's kind of a few steps, a little bit of loose paperwork, but we want to encourage widespread acceptance within your congregation. So there's a statement of intent that's signed by your leadership, like your church council or your pastor, rabbi, to show that the leadership is on board. We encourage the green teams to craft their own mission statement and really hone in on what the goals are within that and the emphasis that you'd like to pursue. And then we get into the fun stuff of crafting an annual plan. So this is your roadmap for the activities that the congregation will partake in throughout the coming year. And that's what we're going to do together for a bulk of our time today, is walk through each of the five different green fields. Hello, welcome.
Hi.
Dennis, right?
Yes.
Welcome. Now let's pass around our next worksheet too while we're at it. So, like I mentioned before, these are different flavors, or choose your adventure, with how you want to approach greening in your community. So Maddie is handing out a worksheet that we often walk through with green teams that helps take an inventory of what you have previously accomplished together, and then using that to help set goals for where you would like to go with your year to come. So what we will be doing is just walking through each of those green fields, and I can explain them and share some examples. Since we're a small group, we can chat as we go along if you want to share anything that your community has done in that green field or ideas that you have. We can do that together since we're relatively small. So I'm going to just erase here. Okay, so with our green fields, they start with worship. And worship is a really natural place to start because it's where you're going to reach your broadest audience. Right? The folks who aren't going to come to our workshops or stick around for coffee hour, but can be there to worship in with the largest community gathering of most faith communities. And there's a lot of ways that you can weave your greeting into worship. There's some more overt ways, like encouraging your pastor or rabbi to preach on creation care, to do a whole season of creation. That's a really cool resource that is usually a month-long series. I know that Peace Lutheran in West Seattle.
We did, it was only three weeks this year.
3 weeks, and it was on rivers this year, right?
Rivers,
yes.
Because we live near a river.
Yeah, so it's the season of creation is, you can Google it and they provide resources, but often different congregations will adapt their own. And it's like one Sunday focused on rivers and the next Sunday focused on air, and the next Sunday focused on land or agriculture. So looking at each week through a different connection to creation. You can also do more subtle ways of incorporating creation care into worship. So looking at the physical nature for when we are physical together again at church, but looking at paper use with bulletins, looking at within the bulletins, including like a creation corner blurb to suggest things that people can take home with them, including creation in your decor, like the altar that they made here. When you walk into a space and you see the natural items, right, or you see the vestments that are embroidered with earth or leaves or water, that all sends a message that this is something the community is mindful of and values. I think worship is the space that's a bit more like leader oriented than lay leader. So like the clergy or the music director might have a bit more of a say in that. And the rest are a bit more kind of congregant led. But I'll pause there to see if there's other ideas that people have and want to share out around greeting and worship.
I don't exactly have a question or a suggestion, but do you ever encounter much resistance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question about encountering resistance. So the communities that Earth Ministry usually engages with are those that want to do something around environmental stewardship, but often don't know where to begin. Right? So we're not so much in the business of showing up at a community and trying to convince them that climate change is real or anything like that.
That's what I'm kind of wondering is, if a congregation decides to do this, mm-hmm. are there two or three members that say, I can't really support that, I'm going to leave the congregation or something like that?
Yeah.
That kind of resistance.
Yeah. I'm sure that there are varied opinions within each community, as it is with community. I haven't heard a lot of that level of resistance because, as we were saying earlier, you know, in the beginning of the process, you have to have that statement of intent, the leadership is supporting this. So generally, there's enough awareness and support across the community to engage that you wouldn't have a high level of resistance like that, like a whole bunch of folks deciding to leave. There might be a couple who grumble, or disagree, or this is not their thing, and you know that's okay. We mostly spend our energy in supporting and engaging those who really want to be doing this work, but are unsure of quite where to go with that, rather than spending the energy trying to convince folks that are resistant to it. It's just that the outcomes are much more plentiful when you focus on supporting versus combating, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in a lot of communities we also deal with folks that maybe have different ideas of how to address the climate crisis or like what's the first thing we should be doing as a congregation. And that's where like we can be a really good resource and plug in there. You know, some folks in the congregation may be really, really passionate about we're going to change all of our light bulbs to LEDs, and there may be others that have different ideas, like we want to just do advocacy, et cetera, which is why it's great the program is really, like you can personalize it to your congregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we really encourage kind of getting beyond, like the basics are really important and good, and we always want to be stretching and growing ourselves, right? So if your congregation already has, you know, creation and prayers of the people and is doing kind of basic stuff in worship, then the stretch might be going more towards, like, we want to do a celebration of the Feast of St. Francis and have a big worship service on Earth Sunday dedicated to this, or do the Season of Creation series. So again, but the inventory is kind of looking at where your starting point is and then how you can continue to bring people along, so that you're not just kind of stagnant in doing the same stuff. Okay, so Yeah, like I said, worship is the Greenfield that's kind of on its own with leadership. So then we hit more into kind of lay-led activities. So our next Greenfield is education, and that is taking the time to learn together. And of course, that is something that is built into, sorry, it's really hard for me to write and talk to someone. Built into life together in houses of worship. Hello, welcome, come on in. Maddie will give you the handouts that we're just talking to you.
I was just looking for a water bottle.
Oh, that's okay, grab your water bottle. Okay, so education is taking the time to learn together. So we see a lot of folks also starting here kind of early on to grow the foundation of awareness of what are the issues in our area. So it could involve bringing in somebody from a local conservation group to talk about what's happening with wildlife in the region, what's happening with fossil fuel extraction in the region, learning about the place that you are in, learning about the original stewards of the land you're in, who are still stewarding the land today as the tribal nations of the region. Oftentimes there's good book studies and discussions. So one that we read together as the Earth Ministry community this year is Breeding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. She is an indigenous botanist and talks really about connection with the land through the plants around us. Another one that we read together is Act of Hope by Joanna Macy, which is really, and Chris Johnstone as well, which is really looking at how we cultivate hope as an active action, as something that's not passive, but something we're really working to grow within us and cycle through all of the feelings that come with this work. So the education piece, some communities can kind of get stuck there. Some of us have a more intellectual leaning and want to just learn everything we can before we go out and do. So that's kind of the pitfall that we work to navigate around with this Greenfield and find that balance of it's really important to be informed, and you don't have to be an expert to engage in the work of environmental stewardship and advocacy, which you'll hear me rant about more tomorrow. I'm really passionate about this because a lot of times people say like, oh, I don't know enough. I'm like, well, do you know your values? Do you know that your faith tells you to be a caretaker of creation and to stand alongside those on the margins? Cool, that's enough to go speak up on this public comment period about clean drinking water. So I just share that with the Education Greenfield as an awareness that it can be somewhere that we like to stay, that can feel a bit safe versus some of the more out and active ones. Okay, anyone want to share examples of education that you've seen in your community or ideas you might have or questions about this Greenfield? We also do a lot of movie screenings. There's a film we've been showing that is by League of Daily Network and talks about a fracked gas facility that is being built on the land and waters of the Puyallup tribe in Tacoma, Washington. So Maddie has been doing screenings of that across Earth Ministry congregations for the last year through Zoom, and that's another good medium for education and learning.
Yeah, and we love to come speak to congregations, whether it be online or, not in person really yet. This is our first big in-person workshop series. But, both that education is important, but then it also leads us to action, and that's what we really try to do in our programming. Mm-hmm. In terms of education, I was just thinking, a lot of, especially Protestant denominations have some really good curricula for all ages for mm-hmm. this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. There's increasingly more and more out there to support creation justice awareness and education resources for all ages. Earth Ministry offers a few of those. We have some focused on food, some focused on water, some focused on transportation. So there's a lot out there that if you hear a specific interest within your community, you can look towards that direction.
I think it's really helpful, both in worship and education, to dive into whatever tradition, you know, whether it's Unitarian Universalist, which is broader, right, or whether it's Christian, or whether it's Jewish, or, you know, or specifically Catholic or Protestant. You know, that you mentioned St. Francis, for instance, right, too. Mm-hmm. That's a really, that his story and his life are a really great example of ways in which the Christian church does have this in its DNA, right?
Right.
Because it's too easy to say, oh, you know, the Christian church has been responsible for the desolation of the earth. Well, yes and no, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of riches there in the biblical witness and the historical tradition that I think we sometimes move too quickly to other cultures or other traditions, including Native American traditions, which are beautiful, but they're not our tradition.
Right.
So I think I've found at least that people listen better if you're talking about something that they're at least, you know, that's in their own DNA.
Oh, thank you, Catherine. It's such a good point to start with where you are rooted, and to do some archaeology there sometimes, right? Because it sometimes does feel like it's a little bit buried. It's not the first of all social justice issues that often comes up, though I think it's increasingly gaining more attention these days. But to start with your tradition, and that's a value that Earth Ministry is really leaning into as we are increasingly becoming a multi-faith organization and really wanting to hold space for everyone to show up from where they are located, not to kind of melt together as the least common denominator, let's say. As a Lutheran, I have this social statement on caring for creation, and this is what it outlines, and this really resonates with my theology of grace and theology of the cross and these very Lutheran tenets. So that's a document that could be a really exciting thing to explore with your communities if you are in a Lutheran context. Or Laudato Si if you're in a Catholic context, or the Seventh Principle if you're in the UU world. So that's a great point, thank you. Okay, so our next green field, we can also go back to any of these if other ideas come up. Our next one is community engagement. And I think often there's confusion of like, well, how's that different than education? Community engagement is a bit more action-oriented and also extends beyond just your congregation out into the broader neighborhood, community, to bring in folks from all walks of life. So with community engagement, we often see things like a house of worship hosting a recycling drive. But doing that with a local company that picks up things that you can't normally recycle, right? Electronics recycling, and using the church parking lot to do that. Doing an electric vehicle fair in your church parking lot. That's one of the things, one of the big cathedrals is going to be having a rally around electric vehicles later this month that we'll be at, actually next week. Wow.
Gosh, yeah.
doing things like community events, community gardens. The church that I got to serve as an intern has a community garden that primarily serves those in the neighborhood more than the congregation and invites people in to work the land and connect that way. Local food potlucks. Food is often a great way to gather across time and space, right, for different folks. Or broader community events like community forums. You can do candidate forums at houses of worship as long as they meet certain requirements to be nonpartisan. But that's a way to say, okay, we want to have a candidate forum for everyone running for city council, you have to invite all the candidates, and that's one of the core ways you keep it nonpartisan. But say, we're going to do this on climate justice. So the topic is climate justice. All the candidates will be here, and anyone from the community can come and hear and use that to discern who they might want to vote for. The line can get, you know, people can be like, oh, that's too much for church. But really, again, you'll hear us talk about this more tomorrow. That is something that we believe is totally within our right and responsibility as people of faith to engage in that public process and to hold space for others to help feel more comfortable approaching it as well. Any ideas around community engagement or thoughts?
I think one thing you could do is look for things that are already going on in your community. Mm-hmm. Like Vashon has a pretty active zero waste group, so mm-hmm. I would think we could, you know, approach them and say, you know, what kind of, where could we fit into what you're already doing instead of trying to reinvent?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Dennis. I love that. We are all about bringing our wheels together and not reinventing them because there's a lot of work to do within environmental stewardship, right? So getting connected with those in your local community who are engaged, honoring their work, plugging in, supporting it. I know a lot of our houses of worship participate in like Earth Month activities. I'm thinking of Whidbey Island, which is somewhat close to Vashon. They have a big Earth and Ocean Month, and the different greeting congregations on Whidbey all bring different gifts to that and have booths at the fairs and all of that to engage and to share. And I think it also, you know, I'm not the biggest evangelist. I don't think that's a very Lutheran thing, there is something to say about showing up in the community and saying, you know, we're not just like over here stuck in our Bibles. We're like out in the world. We want to engage with you. We care about similar things and we share our values. And even if you are not somebody practicing the Christian tradition, you are welcome here to engage in this with us, right? So I think it's a really great witness to be out in the community and participate in broader sustainability efforts. And to show up there as a person of faith, as a member of Peace Lutheran or Valor First Lutheran, and to share that this is something your community is engaged in. I think especially in the Northwest, we're much more quiet about being church people sometimes. So I'm an advocate for sharing that part of our identity.
Yeah, one thing my congregation has been thinking about in the last year is my congregation is in North Seattle, and we're a fairly affluent congregation and have a lot of resources that we can share and direct to different places in our community. And we've been, you know, thinking a lot about, you know, how can we partner with, you know, different environmental justice groups or racial justice groups that we may not be as connected with because we're in a formerly redlined neighborhood and a lot of our congregants are white. The UU tradition is still fairly heavily white. So I think it's similar to Lutheranism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a lot of work there to do. Mm-hmm. But one thing our congregation did in the last year was hold a plate collection for efforts to build what's called a resilience mm-hmm. hub at a BIPOC church in South Seattle, which is generally a more racially diverse part of Seattle versus where our church is located. And so trying to like build those relationships, I think is definitely community engagement, and then also like putting our money where our mouth is. Yeah, and we also had a plate collection for Sunrise Movement this year, which is a youth-led climate group, and I think those, like thinking about where we're directing resources, has definitely been a part of thinking about how we can be more active in the community throughout Seattle and build those relationships that are so important for, you know, making the world we want to see.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing those examples. I just love that University UU is doing that. And I think the conversation around resilience is one that will increasingly be a part of the gifts that houses of worship offer the broader community as things only become more extreme and we were really going to have to reform our ways of living on this one and only planet. Resiliency is something that will be so important, and we're hearing more and more about the movement for houses of worship to be these hubs of resilience for community members across their region.
What does that mean?
So, yes, I was just realizing that I was like, oh, that's a term that may be new to folks.
Yeah.
And I, you know, sometimes, yes, please ask us if we say something that you're like, what's that? Because we're so deep in this all the time. But, the idea behind this resilience hub is that it can be a place in the community where if there's a disaster, natural or otherwise, or a crisis, that folks can congregate and take care of one another.
Oh,
and
my church has done that. We have a box outside our church that contains disaster supplies.
Oh, uh-huh.
And the idea is that people will come to us. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, and especially
so like
these days.
A cooling center.
Yeah, when folks talk about resilience, in this context, they're often talking about climate resilience, which could be, you know, this massive heat wave we had a month ago in the Seattle area, which we were not prepared for or ready for.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, these congregations are great places to have a resilience hub because they're usually already hopefully connected in the community and have larger facilities that aren't used every day necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think the idea behind this resilience hub is that it, you know, might have battery backup to have power if the neighborhood doesn't, might have solar power, you know, and...
Or even just Wi-Fi for people to come to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and so it's really designed, like, my congregation isn't the only one that's supporting this resilience hub in South Seattle. Like, it's hasn't been, they're trying to get this church off the fossil fuels since, you know, there's some old equipment, and that's a pretty constant struggle in a lot of our congregations, I think. Do you want to say any more about it?
Yeah, I'll just share a resource because this is more and more emerging. And so our partners at a national organization called Creation Justice Ministries have been doing a lot around resilience, and so you can, it's CGM, right? Yeah, I think it's them that's doing it.
Yeah, it's Creation Justice is doing a lot.
So they've developed a resource, so that's something you can put on your list of things to Google when you get home, and both in how to prepare your community to be a hub for resilience, and then some of the more logistical ideas of things that you can offer in case of whatever is to come.
That's a good idea.
I believe they also have a map that shows congregations that are at risk from sea level rise.
Yeah.
That's most of that work they've done is on the East Coast, I think. But it's very interesting and sobering.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've worked with a congregation in Maryland that's like, it's in Annapolis and fairly close to the Chesapeake Bay. And they like put in this big rain garden / boggy marshy habitat that actually is like protecting the congregation from flooding. Yeah. Very cool.
That's a good.
You gotta go to
the
team.
I'm on dish duty. So
thank you for serving us with dish duty.
I have to go change before.
Yeah,
you
gotta be here. Dennis, yeah.
So maybe this is what you're talking about, but it seems to me like if you're trying to partner with another community, it's pretty important to, like maybe a poorer community, go in and find out what things are important to them rather than say what's important to you,
mm-hmm.
and partner with us on that.
Yeah.
A community, you know, primarily Black community, mm-hmm. is probably more concerned about racial justice than saving the forests or
yes.
air pollution or something like that.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Another really great point. So with this example, in full transparency of learning and growth, folks initially wanted to fundraise and give money for folks to switch their heat pumps over, or switch to electric
from heat a gas furnace to a heat pump in individual households.
Yeah, so there was some, you know, folks who have been in the environmental movement for a long time who are really aware about fracked gas as a pollutant in households and said, let's raise money for this. And then community members in the neighborhoods where they were thinking like, oh yeah, we'll help you get a heat pump instead of a furnace. They were like, we don't care about that. So that's exactly what you bring up, of the importance of listening, asking, offering, and listening, and responding to that. So this group did do that well in saying, okay, actually, this I hear this is not what you want. What do you want? Oh, you want a resilience hub out of this church in South Seattle. Like, that's something we could help support. So there's a bit of a hiccup there at the beginning, but a good learning and response to that feedback that is now redirected the efforts of the communities that are fundraising for this resilience hub. Yeah, so important. Okay, let's keep going here. I realized I got a little bit of out of order with our worksheet, but that is okay. Our next green field is buildings and grounds. So I actually like doing this later on because most people want to jump right there. This is the sexy stuff. The stuff like getting your light bulbs in order, you know, the physical things. I guess, are light bulbs sexy? I don't know. But the physical things, the things that your brain might go to right away when you think, we want to be a greening congregation. And the projects can range in scope, right? So it could be starting with basics, like using ceramic dishware instead of disposable at your coffee hour, getting your lighting changed, thinking about your heat system, that's a bigger one actually, thinking about insulation with your windows. So a good place to start with buildings and grounds is to work with either a contractor, or sometimes cities have resources. So I know that Seattle Public Utilities has a staff member who will go do walkthroughs of buildings and can point out things that they see where there's room for improvement in terms of your energy efficiency, and help kind of provide you with a suggestion of where to go. Then there's also, you know, the bigger public-facing projects, the solar panels, the installing electric vehicle charging stations in your parking lot, maybe ripping up your parking lot or having permeable surface on instead of asphalt. Rain gardens are something that's really important in the Northwest. And here Peace Lutheran has installed rain gardens. There's actually certain parts of the city of Seattle that will give you a free rebate for doing that.
Which is how we got ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of incentives out there, and increasingly so. Right now, we're also working with a partner organization called Zero Waste Washington that's offering a mini grant for houses of worship to install water bottle refill stations. So to take their drinking fountain and add that piece that goes on the back where you can just refill a water bottle super conveniently, because that's been shown to cut down on waste and encourage wise water use. So there's a lot out there, a lot of opportunities that you can take advantage of for community spaces like houses of worship. And this, like I said, is kind of the tangible things that can be really rewarding for a green team, because it's something that the community can really witness and celebrate, and can often be seen by the broader community as well. Anyone want to share anything that you've seen in terms of cool buildings and grounds projects?
Well, I somehow ended up being the groundskeeper at my congregation. However, that's not a big deal because the building occupies only about 2 city lots. Mm-hmm. Then there's no parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I started with that was an evangelical one. That is, keeping the grounds looking good for the sake of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
As well as making it look inviting to potential
mm-hmm.
visitors and potential residents. But now I see that I'm beginning to think that there's more to what I do than I had realized, and mm-hmm. I'll start thinking more about that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Do you want to speak more into that?
I'm not sure what to say, really. I'm a gardener because I'm an outdoor person. I really enjoy gardening, and the church is not the only place where I garden. Mm-hmm. I also help maintain a local elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
The Seattle School District built this beautiful new building after tearing down an old building, and installed some extensive, really attractive landscaping, but made no provision for maintaining the landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
So I got tired of looking at the weeds and the dead branches, and I started going over to weed and to prune, and now I go once a week to do that. And I get lots of thank yous mm-hmm. from people. I'm not sure that that's in the same category as what we're talking about, but it does make the community look a lot better. It makes the community look cared for.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the teachers feel like they're part of the community that cares about them, and mm-hmm. the education system in Seattle has been badly disrupted by the pandemic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Oh, I love that, Barbara. Thank you. And I love the aspect of care that comes
yes.
into it, of making
mm-hmm.
people feel cared for, but also showing that you care for this land on which you reside
yes.
and that
mm-hmm.
the Creator has entrusted mm-hmm. to us to be.
And even though
it's
not the natural world exactly, it has been replanted and
mm-hmm.
is worth caring for, I think.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah. Thank you. That's awesome. Other thoughts around buildings and grounds? I haven't seen any butterfly. I think there's definitely like pollinator gardens as a common thing that houses of worship are doing, which would probably tend to butterflies. I've also seen some churches really doing cool stuff with beehives. And doing beekeeping on grounds to help support the pollinators.
Getting the congregation really involved seems to be a problem even at my
mm-hmm.
advanced church.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of the pandemic, people
mm-hmm.
are afraid to come to the building and.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think involvement is something that is an ongoing challenge, and often there's one or two folks who are leading the green team and who are most gung-ho and passionate about it and just do a lot of the work. I think where we see the most success in terms of buildings and grounds is when there's really explicit invitations for people to share their gifts. So, for example, my internship church again, their green team was really looking at their landscaping, and they were thinking about planting street trees, which is something you can get from the city. You can get trees for free from the city to plant. And there's somebody who's not on the green team, but they happen to know that she was a landscape architect. And so they're like, oh, well, let's reach out to Jan S. and ask her about this and see if she can help us. And so even though she's not, doesn't have the capacity to serve on the green team, has stepped in to help with this one specific project. So I think there's a bit of shamelessness that entails of kind of knowing members of your community and approaching people shamelessly to be like, will you help me? Do you know much about furnaces? Or I noticed you drive an electric vehicle and we're talking about a charging station here. Like, where do you often charge your car and what kind are you using at home or I don't know. So trying to be, you know, not just relying on your own, but actively inviting others in. The other piece I'll share in terms of all of our greenfields really gets back to the importance of listening for engagement. So again, I'm speaking from my internship church. They did a whole series of listening sessions within the congregation where there were members of a team who took the church directory and tried to meet with everyone on it and set up one-on-one meetings and just talk in those meetings to hear, what are you concerned about? When we talk about the environment, what comes to mind for you? They actually started this originally thinking that they were going to provide a kind of a spread of issue areas that people had mentioned. When they said kind of, they started with just like, what keeps you up at night? They totally thought that the issue area that was going to emerge was homelessness, which is a significant issue in King County. But what came up and surprised them more often was the environment and climate change. And so hearing that, they kind of shifted their focus and then started to ask, okay, well, what is it about climate change that keeps you up at night, right? And kind of honing in. And so eventually from what they heard in these conversations with folks was that we really want to be a space that commits to our values. And so they've set a goal of becoming a net zero carbon emission facility with their building. So from that listening, they got a lot more community buy-in and engagement and set their goals based on what they were hearing, which has brought in a lot more individuals than if the Green Team had just said, let's be a net zero building and we're just gonna go for it, right? So I think that that is a process that definitely takes more time. And sometimes we feel like we don't have time with environmental stewardship, right? But it really pays dividends out in the investment of the community. Does that make sense? Okay, so let's get to our final greenfield, which we will be talking about a lot more, but it is faithful advocacy. So, can you write it up? So if you remember a three-legged stool, this also counts as a third leg of the stool, so that shows it's rather important. But it's really getting out and speaking up for systemic change. So most of these, I mean, community engagement is kind of is focused more outward, but it's still the life of the congregation, right? Faithful advocacy is bringing the life of the congregation into the broader public discourse of the community. So that could be on the local level with the neighborhood council, the city council, the county council. It could be broader with a state level advocacy or a federal, but bringing the values that we articulate out to say, okay, this is how we see them reflected or want to see them more reflected in the systems in which our society is operating. Faithful advocacy is something that we don't wake up knowing how to do, right? So it's a muscle that we exercise. My mentor, Jesse, who is actually here with us this week, used to joke that democracy isn't something, it isn't like, it's like exercise. It's not something you can do once every 4 years and call it good, right? If you just go on, try to run a marathon once every 4 years, it's not gonna work out probably very well for you. So it's something that we can participate in year-long and have different seasons that are more intense than others, like our state legislative sessions are kind of a go time when you're sprinting for much of it, election times when we're trying to pass an initiative, or you know, right now with the congressional infrastructure package. So there are definitely seasons where it feels like advocacy is more pressing, but it is something that you can do year long, and there are a lot of processes that can feel wonky, and Earth Ministry's job is to make it feel as approachable as possible for you. So for example, you know, we're following along things like the Department of Ecology setting a new drinking water standard for a class of toxic chemicals called PFAS. Again, not something that most people wake up knowing about or knowing how to speak up about. And there's like multiple comment periods in terms of like the scope of what the Department of Ecology will look at. And then there's the draft of the environmental plan. And then there's a chance to comment on that. So we follow along on all of these issues. We are in active conversation with coalition partners to be sure that we're strategically aligned. And then we provide the opportunity for members of Earth Ministry to show up and speak up as people of faith explicitly, and to say, you know what, I actually really care about this drinking water standard because water is so central to the Christian faith. And clean water, I believe, is a human right and something that that all deserve inherently to enjoy. So the fact that our water is contaminated, the fact that that is concentrated in more low-income and diverse communities is something we have a moral responsibility to address. Bringing in those types of talking points versus like the parts per million of PFAS in water found on the wells on Whidbey Island are this many times above the federal standard. Like, that is something I know a lot about, and I'm like, I don't really care. So that's why our advocacy as people of faith is really rooted in values and stories. And at the end of the night, that's what a decision maker is going to remember much more than facts and figures that might have been thrown at them. So that's the gift that we bring as people of faith when we do take the time to advocate. It's a different level than the average talking points that are out there, a different level of moral grounding. Earth Ministry does offer training around this. Like I said, it's not something most of us wake up knowing how to do. So we'll be doing our training tomorrow of our advocacy overview. And then we also do more in-depth advocacy workshops on specific issues. So some congregations are really following along on different campaigns. Like, some are really wanting to stop all the fossil fuel proposals that have popped up in the Northwest. And so when there's an action comment period around that, we'll show up and tell them where things stand. Some are really following the toxics issue. And so, and some just want to kind of keep abreast with the spectrum of things Earth Ministry is working on. So this is a service we offer to your community, and we're always happy to come and talk more about advocacy and give people the tools to engage. Questions about advocacy? Knowing that there's a lot more to come.
I'll just say a lot of legislators are also affiliated with faith traditions, both at the state and federal level. Jess has a little book that like lists every state legislator's faith tradition if they identify with one and have like said that. And that can also be really powerful in our advocacy, and where like our activists and our staff might be able to get a meeting with someone that the Sierra Club wouldn't, you know. And so I think that's one thing that's also really powerful with faithful advocacy.
Yeah.
We'll talk more tomorrow.
I love sharing how there was a Republican congressman in the Issaquah area who is no longer in office, but when he was, we had built a good relationship with him, and he's Lutheran. And so in my first meeting with him, I like made some jokes about Martin Luther and like quoted him. And so we had a good chuckle and a bond over our shared Lutheran tradition. And we were talking to him about public lands and caring for our forests and setting aside more area for conservation. And so we had built this relationship, and we were there with constituents from his district that Earth Ministry had organized. And then it was maybe a few months down the road was when the conversation came up around Arctic drilling. And we wrote him and said, hey, it was great, remember us, you know, we met and we talked about public lands here locally. Well, now we're talking about Arctic drilling, and really encourage you to take a stance to oppose that. And because it doesn't align with our values that we spoke about. And so he ended up being like one of a handful of Republicans who signed on against Arctic drilling. And I'm not gonna say that was just because we asked him to, but I do think that that there's some influence there, right? And he's, again, someone who would probably not get a meeting very easily with the Nature Conservancy, right? Or a big, glaringly environmental nonprofit. How does advocacy, just also to give us a temperature check for where we're headed tomorrow, how does it feel to you all? Is it intimidating? Is it something you have some experience with?
I think it feels kind of intimidating because I'm an introvert.
Mm. That's real, yeah.
Also, I get an awful lot of email from organizations requesting me to advocate or to send money, and sometimes I just want to turn them all off.
Mm.
Do any of the rest of you get that experience?
Yeah. You get on somebody's list and you're on all of them, so I kind of look at it as, in a way, spam, and I got to choose the two or three that I'm really interested in, and maybe even get off the lists of the other ones.
And they say that it's not necessarily safe to unsubscribe from things because you may be doing what the scammers want. So.
Oh dear. Well, I totally respect and hear that, and that's why Earth Ministry is really mindful about the number of emails that we send out. Of course, we would love to be connected with you, and there is a sign-in sheet here where you can stay in touch with us. But you know, that's why when we send out action alerts, we're really mindful of this is something that really will make a difference. It only takes 7 contacts to move a decision maker up or down a notch. So that doesn't mean from no to a yes, but from like, wow, I hadn't heard about that, to, oh, I should look into that. And maybe from a no to a, okay, well, I might reconsider and learn more. Or from a learning more to, okay, I might start speaking up. Or from a, yeah, I support that, to like, oh, I'm really gonna champion that now because I've heard from 7 people in my district that it matters to them. So it's really not a lot, right? There's 6 of us here today. So that's just one of my favorite fun facts about advocacy. But yes, I do hear about the overwhelm that can come with the advocacy actions and feeling like, is this meaningful or is this someone trying to get me on their list? I can assure you, just I don't know, I don't want to sound defensive, but I can assure you that we never share any information at Earth Ministry with anyone else. Our personnel policies through our board, not personnel, but our board policies are very strict about that in comparison to other organizations I've worked with. So if you do sign up, we promise we won't be sharing your info, and we also respect unsubscribes, and that happens right away in our system.
I understand that it's also important to contact your legislators, even if you know that they're on board with something.
Mm-hmm.
They keep track of how many people, and they report it somewhere, and it gets, it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a good point. yeah, a lot of times we think, oh, I'm not going to bother because they're already going to vote the way I want them to. But every contact does increase momentum and incentivizes them to show more and more conviction with their level of support. And I've talked to legislators that really love how we show up and tell stories because those are stories that they carry forward. So if you show up and you say, I was at this canoe journey event and it had to keep saying over the speakers to the children, don't play in the water because the water isn't safe. And the kids, of course, because they're kids, want to keep running out there into the shallow water, and they had to keep saying it over and over on the microphone, and every time they did, my heart just dropped a bit, right? Because I want these kids to live in a world where the water is clean so they can play. And that's why we don't need another polluting fossil fuel facility that is going to leak into these waters that are already so contaminated. Right? Those are the stories that they can carry forward and share when they go to the floor and are talking across the aisle. And that might move somebody else. Or another example is someone who's formerly on our board had their first grandson born with a birth defect that is tied to one of the classes of chemicals that we work on. And so she showed up and shared this story and was like, this is not the news you want to see when you're in the hospital waiting to hear about your grandbaby, is that they've been rushed off to surgery because of this issue that is so directly tied, that science shows is so directly tied to these chemicals. So those stories both move the person you're talking to, but can sit with them enough that then they take them out and continue sharing them and touching others. Okay, well, we're going to talk a lot more about faithful advocacy, so I hope that you will come along for that ride. I'm going to do a quick time check. We're close to wrapping up here, and we were going to have some time for partner conversations, but since we're a small group here, we can just do it full circle. So, Maddie, I'll invite you back up to help facilitate there, and we'll just be starting to think about what from this today are we going to take back?
Yeah, it's hard to think of just one thing you want to take back because I've, like, even though I do this work every day, like, I've turned on my mic.
Oh, it is on.
Okay. You know, there's still so much to learn and everyone can always do more things, which sometimes feels really overwhelming. But yeah, just from what we've talked about today, like what's sticking with you right now that you want to take back to either a faith community or, I mean, today we're talking about greening congregations, but it really could be applicable to any sort of community that you're affiliated with, organization, or even just your family, I think.
Yeah, I guess to me it's nice to know that somebody has thought about this stuff and has experience with it, and I don't have to, if I wanted to do it in my congregation or whatever, I wouldn't have to go alone and feel like the, well, I'm a prophet or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we get a lot of folks that come to us and say, I'm really passionate about this and don't know what to do in my congregation because I feel like I'm the, quote, green sheep is a term that we use a lot. Yeah, and we have some, Jessica actually has, so if you want to talk a bit about resources for green sheep.
Yes, so we have our toolkit, which I mentioned, that we'll send out via email if you want to sign up. And then we are actually in the process of creating a second resource to accompany it, and I'm really excited to share, hopefully later this year or early next, that will have kind of more like links and things you can click through resources. The current toolkit has a lot of ideas, like install a rain garden, but the one we're working on gets more into, here's some resources that you can use to install a rain garden. We're also increasingly working to connect those green sheep that we call colleagues. And so we're having a monthly gathering for folks from different green teams to come together and share what they're doing and learn from one another and ask questions and share what's hard. And so it's kind of a space for support and community as folks are living this out in really varied contexts. So Peace Lutheran is participating in that, and I know that they've received a climate action plan from one of the other churches in the group that's now being brought over. So it's a great space for resource sharing and support.
Yeah, we really want to connect people. Because, community is also one of Earth Ministry's big values, and no one can do this work alone. That'd be so hard. I'm realizing I haven't thought a lot about the landscaping or plants and grounds at my congregation, and that's something I want to learn more about, since I know a lot about the advocacy side of things and less about that side of things. what's stuck with others of you from what we've talked about today?
Well, I guess I've learned a lot more about your organization, and I will now go back home and study up on some of the things that the group has been doing that I haven't been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy to have come.
Yay!
Mm-hmm.
We love to hear that. Yeah, and it's like, I think a lot of these things we've talked about have been on hold in many congregations during the pandemic as we just try to survive and get through it and figure out how to do congregational life online and in many aspects. And so now is a good time, I think, in many places to restart some of this work and passions.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, for me, I was just trying to think what I would be comfortable doing, you know, and what needs to be done and what I could contribute. And I'm an introvert, but...
I am an introvert as well.
And also I don't have a faith community. But it looks, I'm sure I would find a place to fit in, serve.
Yeah, and I want to say that the model we've been talking about today is more within the realm of faith communities, but this is also something you can certainly apply to your personal life or your networks, your communities, other spaces. Like there's a group called Sustainable Ballard that is one you might have heard of that could be a community space that you bring pieces of this into. So we talk about this program in terms of congregational engagement because it's a really handy organizing tool, right? It's a kind of a pre-baked space that you can bring this into, but it certainly can be taken out into other spaces and embodied in your individual life as well.
Yeah, one thing I'm also realizing I want to learn more about is existing programs that utilities offer. And obviously every utility is different and isn't going to offer the same programs, but those can be really helpful for both individuals and nonprofits like a church community.
What would those programs be?
Yeah, so Jess talked a little bit about the rain garden and tree program in Seattle, but programs like that exist at county levels and at city levels, like throughout Washington and the country, and like that's something we can help connect folks with as well.
Or even just like the audit support from utility staff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Vista Power in Spokane, they have like, they're only $5 or $10 more a month, you can have switch to supporting the wind power, mm-hmm. which helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the city is also offering like $500 to $800 to people for taking out their green grass and
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of programs like that. Our light bulb rebates are a popular thing these days, mm-hmm. even in places that are, quote, more conservative and maybe aren't thinking as much about climate justice. But everyone wants to save money and conserve energy. Like, that's a pretty easy thing to do in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. And realize that as a meeting, we haven't really done much of anything with these kind of things because we're very small. I mean, Quakers are like, we probably have 45 people and maybe only 20 or 22 show up on Sunday.
Do you have an actual building or do you rent space?
We do have our own building.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
And we separated a couple of years ago from Northwest Yearly Meeting, the denomination, because of their lack of support of opening and affirming LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm.
So we're an independent meeting now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot of places that are easy to start here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to start doing all of them at once. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we do a lot of things like, racial protest support and things like Quakers do, but we haven't done much of anything with this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if there's any age-related thing to this. It seems like everybody's interested in, most people in the environment nowadays, but mm-hmm. most of the congregations in Spokane are what they call gray congregations,
mm-hmm.
and there's just not enough young people.
That also, yeah, I mean, I think that also describes our ministry community to an extent, too, is, you know, because of the way religious demographics are in the Northwest, a lot of folks that are active are older. But there's still a lot of
It's very encouraging to have young people come and talk to us old.
Yeah.
We enjoy it.
I think, too, the Earth Ministry community is an interesting spread. Like, if you look at our board, I'd say
our board is fairly young.
Half is under 40. And so it holds space for folks who might not have found a home in traditional religious practice,
mm-hmm,
but do
mm-hmm.
find connection to something greater through earth and through caring for it, or wanting to see that more in religious communities. So the other thing I'll add, Wade, you pointing out, I'm glad that it feels accessible and that there's some good starting points. Please do take this. Feel free to take a couple more if you want to share. But what I encourage as a starting point is using this as an inventory, which I kind of said briefly at the beginning, but really starting with walking through each green field with your team and thinking about what have we already done. Because it's easy to say, oh, we haven't done much. And then you stop and you start to think and you're like, well, actually, maybe we're really good at being sure the lights are off and the thermostat is low after our meetings, right? You know, the little things that are just habits that you don't think about so much.
Use pesticides.
Or maybe we're using green cleaning supplies. Start there and it will kind of help you see a really interesting picture of where there's a lot of interest in the community. So you might do an inventory and see like, wow, everything is in buildings and grounds and education. What does that say about us? Do we want to do more in that? Or have we done a lot there and maybe we want to look in the other green fields? So we've seen that inventory process be really fruitful in the discernment of where to go. And Earth Ministry is happy to come and help kind of facilitate that. And help walk through it.
Yeah, I'll also say we're at the beginning stages of working with another Quaker meeting who wants to become a green congregation, and that could be good connections we could help
mm-hmm.
build if you want to fill out our form. Always good to have. I find it really useful to find folks from my own tradition that care about
mm-hmm.
the same things I do. Like a multi-faith community is really unique and important, but
also, you know, our congregations and different traditions operate in different ways. And
right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think with that.
We're about at lunch.
Yeah. So thank you for spending this time with us. We'll be here again tomorrow and would love to see you. Also understand there's a lot going on. I saw, Barbara, you grabbed one of our newsletters. Please feel free to
My daughter requested
one
of these. I had already taken them.
Oh, good. Yes, please share.
Yes, please share.
Yeah, and if on your way out, if you want to jot your info down on one of these clipboards, that's how we
can. And I already get your
emails. Good, okay.
Awesome.
Actually, will you just put your name down then? Because I want to email out just a follow-up. So even though we have you on our system, if you put your name in, then we'll include you on our follow-up list.